When you look up at a modern jet liner, or maybe the giant blade of a wind turbine, you're seeing materials that seem almost impossibly strong and light.
Absolutely. We really rely on advanced composites like carbon fiber reinforced polymer CFRPs for so much modern engineering.
Especially aviation.
Definitely. But these materials, they face relentless stress. Think about structural parts under years of cyclic loading, that constant cycle of pressure like takeoff, flight, landing, over and over.
Right. And that fatigue, that's really what limits their lifespan.
It's the main factor.
And the big challenge, I guess the nightmare scenario for engineers, is predicting that tipping point.
Exactly. When does a small, maybe even acceptable manufacturing flaw suddenly turn into an unstable crack, the kind that leads to catastrophic failure?
It's knowing that moment. That's the difference between routine maintenance and, well, something much worse.
Which is why we're digging into this today. We found some fascinating research that seems to have successfully quantified this transition. Yeah, they managed to link the material's internal microscopic damage, the really subtle stuff, with its visible stress response right on the surface.
So connecting the inside story to the outside behavior.
Kind of like linking a tiny structural sneeze to a potential earthquake, yeah.
And how did they do that? You mentioned they paired up a couple of powerful techniques.
They did. So the research we looked at analyzed these woven CFRP samples, but they had a deliberate flaw put in.
Like a weak spot.
Exactly, a stress concentrator. Specifically, they drilled a 6 millimeter hole right through them. It mimics what you might find around, say, a bolt or a rivet in a real structure.
Makes sense. And the novelty was using two methods together.
Yes, simultaneously, that's the key.
Okay, so what were they? Let's define them for everyone listening.
All right, first up is digital image correlation, DIC. Think of this as the macro view, the outside perspective.
Okay.
DIC uses high-speed cameras tracking a speckled pattern on the surface during the test. This gives you a full map of how the surface is displacing and straining in situ, so like live during the test.
So you see exactly where it's stretching or buckling in real time.
Precisely.
Okay, that's the outside. What about the inside view?
That's where microtomography or X-ray CT comes in. This is the micro view.
Like a medical CT scan, but for materials?
Sort of, yeah, but much, much higher resolution. We're talking down to 0.6 micrometers here, using powerful X-rays, sometimes even synchrotron light sources.
Wow.
This lets them see the internal 3D structure in incredible detail. They could track things like tiny pores inside the composite and how they change and grow under load.
So basically, you're tracking the material's whole journey from just being stressed to being critically damaged inside and out.
That's the goal.
Okay, let's unpack the macro side first then.
Yeah.
Watching the strain fields with DIC, what was the actual material they were testing?
It was a pretty standard but high-performance woven polymer composite, a 2x2 twill weave structure, epoxy matrix, and the layers had that typical structural orientation, 0, 45, 90, and minus 45 degrees.
Right, designed to handle loads from different directions.
Yeah.
And you mentioned they didn't just break it quickly. They used a specific loading strategy.
Yeah, that's important. It wasn't just ram up till it fails. They used what's called a block loading protocol. 14 distinct blocks, actually.
14 steps.
Yeah. They started the cycling at a fairly low stress amplitude, around 345 megapascals, and then block by block, they gradually increased that amplitude up to the failure load, which was about 410 MPa.
Okay, but why the blocks? Why not just a smooth increase?
Good question. It's because they weren't just interested in when it failed, but how the damage built up. Each block involved, maybe 1,000 or more cycles at a steady amplitude.
Okay.
This allowed the damage accumulation to sort of stabilize at that particular stress level. It gave them clean windows to pause, analyze things, see how the material had changed before they pushed it harder.
Right, like letting the dust settle after each step. Okay, so DIC gives you this amazing surface strain map. But the material's being loaded cyclically, right? Usually at 1 hertz.
Yeah, one cycle per second in this case.
I imagine that constant rhythm must create a huge signal itself, like noise.
It creates the dominant signal. That's the challenge, absolutely.
Yeah.
The DIC sensors are mostly picking up the material's main sort of healthy oscillation as it's stretched and relaxed 60 times a minute.
The main rhythm.
We call that the first harmonic at 1 hertz. If you think of the data like a sound wave, the machine's cycle is this constant, loud drumbeat.
Okay, so the sound of the machine working is drowning out the subtle sound of the material actually breaking down inside. How do you possibly hear that whisper of damage over the loud drumbeat?
While this required some clever signal processing, they needed to isolate the really subtle nonlinear variations, the little cycle-to-cycle jitters that are caused only by the localized damage building up.
Okay, how?
They basically identified that dominant 1 hertz drum beat, that first harmonic, characterized it mathematically, and then digitally filtered it out. They used wavelet transformation techniques to subtract it.
Whoa, okay. So you find the repeating, boring part of the signal, the drum beat, and just remove it from the recording.
Pretty much, yeah.
And what you're left with must be only the non-repeating, kind of chaotic, tiny signals that show something unusual is happening locally.
Exactly. By filtering out the regular predictable part, they were left with just the localized anomalies, those subtle random fluctuations in strain right where damage is starting, long before you'd see a crack with your eye.
That residual signal then shows you the real dynamics of the damage process itself.
That's the idea. Very powerful.
Okay, so now they have this clean data showing just the damage dynamics. How do they visualize it? You mentioned something called phase portraits.
Right, phase portraits. This is a way to map the material's behavior dynamically. You plot the strain, epsilon, on one axis against its rate of change, the strain rate, d epsilon on the other.
So it's not just showing where the strain is, but how fast it's changing, like its momentum.
Kind of, yeah. It charts the dynamics, where it is and where it's going moment by moment.
And these plots revealed two really distinct stages as the load increased.
Very clearly. Stage one was during the earlier blocks, say blocks 1 through 7. In this stage, the phase portraits just showed the cloud of data points gradually shifting and sort of expanding.
What does that mean physically?
It represents gradual distributed damage, you know, micro cracks forming here and there, maybe some fiber matrix debonding happening over a wider area. The material is absorbing stress, but it's still pretty much holding together, distributing the load.
Okay, that's stage one. But things change dramatically in stage two, especially in those last blocks leading to failure.
Yeah, this is the critical transition point. In stage two, especially that final block 14 just before it broke, the picture changes. Instead of one big dispersed cloud, the data points separate into two distinct components.
Okay.
And the most important one is the emergence of this highly concentrated, stable attractor.
Stable attractor, what's that? Like, the data points suddenly start swirling around one specific spot, a structural gravity well, you called it.
That's a great way to put it. It means the local strain dynamics stop being random and spread out. They collapse into a predictable, stable, very focused pattern. It's the material telling you, unmistakably, that the damage process has localized itself.
Ah.
A single, main, unstable crack is now driving the behavior in that specific tiny zone. The structure's found its weakest path and is now focusing all its failure energy right there.
So the stable attractor is the big alarm bell on the macro level. It's the material saying, okay, I'm done breaking slowly everywhere. Now I'm breaking fast right here.
That's it, precisely. Right. Now, there is a second component still visible, a more sort of random cloud of points.
What's that?
That seems to correspond to secondary damage, like little daughter cracks popping up or other micro damage happening away from the main failure zone. But it's the emergence of that dominant stable attractor that's the conclusive signal.
The signal that you've shifted from distributed damage to unstable critical crack growth that's going to lead to failure very soon.
Exactly. That's the key takeaway from the DIC analysis.
Okay. That is a really powerful signal from the outside, the macro view. But like you said earlier, we still need to know why.
Mm-hmm.
Why did that attractor, that structural gravity, well, form right there? What changed inside the material to cause that?
Right. And that brings us perfectly to the second part, the micro view, using the X-ray CT.
Looking inside.
Yep. So to do this, the researchers carefully stopped the loading at a high level around 85% of the ultimate strength material could take.
Before it completely failed, but well into stage two.
Correct. Then they carefully cut out tiny cylindrical samples, just a couple of millimeters in size. And crucially, they took samples from two key areas.
Where from?
One sample from the highly strained zone right next to that 6 millimeter hole where the action was, and another sample from far away in a low strain area as a reference.
So you can compare what does damage look like where it's really failing versus where it's just kind of cruising along.
Exactly that comparison. And the CT scans, with that incredible resolution, they captured all sorts of internal features like matrix cracks between the fiber layers, and most importantly for this story, the inherent pores within the material.
Pores. Like tiny bubbles or voids? I guess all composites have some of those from manufacturing, right?
They do. They're unavoidable to some extent. But the researchers focused heavily on them. They looked at pore volume, their surface area, but the really critical parameter turned out to be the interpore distance, how close they are to each other.
Not just the size of the pores, but their spacing.
That became the key. Their analysis showed this kind of two-step damage process involving pores. First, the mechanical load, especially the cycling, makes existing pores grow bigger.
Okay.
Then that growth seems to trigger new damage sites nearby. They even saw the pores trying to organize under cyclic load, forming distinct clusters.
Interesting. But you said the distance was key. What was the breakthrough finding there, the one that connects back to that stable attractor we saw?
This is really the core insight for predicting failure. It's all about the social life of the pores, you could say. What they found is that pores located in really close proximity to each other, pores that are near neighbors, they grow the most intensely.
They influence each other.
Yes. They grow, the distance between them shrinks, and then eventually they merge, they coalesce, and when they coalesce, they form much larger, much more dangerous defects like internal delaminations or the start of a major crack.
Wow. So the material's fate isn't sealed by having one single big pore somewhere, but by having enough smaller pores that are just too close together. They gang up.
That's a perfect way to describe it. They act like a micro-defect collective. The ultimate strength, the researchers concluded, isn't just about the total volume of voids. It's about the fraction, the proportion, of pores that are closely spaced and therefore likely to merge.
That fraction of bad neighbors, that's the critical factor determining when the material will ultimately fail.
That seems to be the key physical parameter they identified. It turns it from just observing pores to quantifying a critical microstructural feature.
That's huge. Did they look at any other geometric aspects of the pores?
They did. They also looked at sphericity, basically, how close to a perfect sphere each pore is, calculated from its volume and surface area.
Yeah.
While most typical manufacturing pores tend to follow a predictable statistical pattern, a power law relating their size and sphericity. But the really large defects, the ones that formed from this coalescence process due to the loading, they significantly deviated from that expected pattern.
So the ones created by the damage process look different.
Exactly. It confirms these big, often non-spherical merged defects aren't just random flaws from the start. They are unique failure points created by the stress and the cycling. They stand out.
Okay, let's try and tie this all together then. We've got the macro signal, that stable attractor suddenly appearing in the DIC strain data, and we've got the micro story, these closely spaced pores merging, coalescing inside. How do we definitively link the two?
The link is spatial and temporal. The research established that the exact location where that stable attractor emerges in the DIC data and the moment it emerges, that corresponds precisely to the microscale region inside the material where the X-ray CT observed the highest density of those closely spaced pores undergoing that critical coalescence.
So the attractor isn't just saying failure is localized somewhere. It's pointing directly at the spot where the pore cluster just linked up to form the main crack path.
That's the connection they made. And it's a really important addition to classical fracture mechanics. Engineers always knew strain would concentrate near a crack tip, often in a specific mathematical way, like Irwin's theory describes.
Right.
But this coupled approach provides the missing microstructural context. We now have a better understanding of why the crack chose that specific tiny pathway to run along, driven by that pore coalescence, rather than just observing the crack after it already started.
That really feels like the so what moment. This moves things beyond just watching things break.
I think so. This kind of multimodal methodology, combining the macro DIC and micro CT, takes structural analysis beyond just observation. It offers a path towards quantifiable, physics-based prediction of remaining life.
Because you can measure these things now.
Right. By quantifying parameters, like that fraction of closely spaced pores, and then monitoring for the emergence of that specific dynamic signal, the stable attractor engineers could potentially develop much more accurate life prediction models.
Which is absolutely critical in fields like aerospace, wind energy, anywhere where you have these advanced composites under long-term fatigue, and failure just isn't an option. You can't just rely on overly conservative guesses.
It could be a real game changer for structural health monitoring and design. We started this looking at a big piece of engineered material under years of stress.
Yeah.
And we traced the failure right down to tracking the critical proximity of tiny voids, fractions of a human hair across inside the material.
It's an amazing journey from the macro stress concentrator, that hole, down through the dynamic signal of the attractor, right to the secret social life of pores dictating the final break.
Well put.
So here's something to leave you, the listener, thinking about. The failure of something incredibly strong, like this carbon composite, wasn't ultimately dictated by its single biggest, most obvious flaw.
No, it was dictated by the proximity, the closeness, the interactions of its smallest flaws. We now see evidence that microgeometry, simply how close these tiny pores are, dictates the macro failure event.
So the provocation is this. If the integrity of an advanced material hinges on the proximity of its microscale components, how might this principle of localized proximity influencing large-scale behavior apply to other complex systems you encounter?
Think about organizational structures, maybe, or financial markets, computer networks, even biological systems. Where else might the critical factor not be the biggest single element, but the closeness and interaction of the smaller ones? Something I'm all over.